Karen about your help on Healthbeat Radio, part of the Lucy Network. Thank you so much for listening this morning. I'm Karen Hummel, your host, and today I'm so excited to have with me Michelle Pearl. Michelle has a triple certification, which includes credentials as an American Council on Exercise Certified Personal Trainer, Group Fitness Instructor, and an advanced certification as a Lifestyle and Weight Management Consultant. She is the creator of a series of exercise DVDs and the author of Wake Up, You're Probably Never Going to Look Like That, How to Be Happier, Healthier, and Imperfectly Fit. And I have to mention, Michelle has lost 100 pounds, not once, but twice. Michelle, you are truly an inspiration. I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
You know, looking at your website and reading your bio, really found Imperfectly Fit so interesting and exciting. What inspired you to name your company Imperfectly Fit, and what does that mean exactly?
Well, you know, I've been exercising for a long time, and one day I was looking around in the exercise class that I go to, and I was looking at the people that I've been working out with for a long time, years and years in many cases, and it suddenly hit me. You know, you see these rock-hard six-pack abdominals pushed in your face on TV, you know, of these fitness gurus and diet pill-pushing spokesmodels, and it hit me that none of these people who I know exercise regularly, including myself, have a body that looks anything like that. So the idea was, you know what, we may not have maybe supermodel type of bodies, but you know what? We have cardiorespiratory systems that are fit to kill, and our bodies are in the best shape that they can be for the, you know, the history of hell that we put them through, and you know, what we've gone through all through our lives and the genetic hand that we've been dealt. So I wrote this book because there cannot be any disputing that while you may not end up with a Playboy model perfect body, you absolutely don't have to be perfect to be fit.
That is so true. And it's unfortunate. I think there's a lot of trainers out there that make it seem that if you do a certain exercise a certain way that you're going to look that way. You're going to be that rock hard supermodel.
And you know what? It's been proven, absolutely proven, that that's not true. They did this study with people who played tennis. And, of course, when you think about it, somebody who plays tennis, they're going to use that their one arm for both their forehand and their backhand. So if there was such a thing as spot reducing, that would be, they would have one arm that had less body fat than the other. That would make perfect sense. And they studied all these professional tennis players, and they found out that while there was more muscle on the arm that worked more, their body fat percentage was absolutely the same, even after years of use. So it's proven by this study that there is no such thing as spot reducing. You cannot get rock-hard six-pack abdominals unless you were genetically predisposed to have a body like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that message needs to get out because I think a lot of people end up feeling like they're failures when they work hard and they don't look like that.
So true. Thanks for saying that. I mean, I'm in the same industry as you, and I get that question all the time. Well, I want my thighs thinner. I want my stomach flatter.
Don't we all? But what ends up happening is the only thing that works, as we know, is cardiorespiratory exercise, which then will burn fat, and then if you are lucky, it'll fall off where you desire it the least.
Yes.
And otherwise, you know what, you get the genetic hand that you're dealt.
You know, I'm excited about your book. I haven't had the opportunity to read it yet. I'm definitely going to get it. I see that Kai Hibbard from the third season of The Biggest Loser wrote the foreword for you.
Yes, she did. What an angel this woman is. I actually had a website, and I still do. I have a blog called antibiggestloser.com because it was January of this year. I really never liked the concept of the show anyway because of the speedy, fast, ridiculous weight losses that they have on there and how unhealthy that absolutely is. But in January, I'd been driving at night, and I was listening to a simulcast of the Joy Behar show. And on this show, they had the primary trainer, Jillian Michaels. And on this show, this woman who's, you know, millions of people listen to every single day for weight loss advice, Joy Behar said to her, you know, I understand that you're only supposed to lose 2 pounds a week, and so isn't your show kind of dangerous, something to that effect? And Jillian Michaels said, quote, you know what? I don't believe that there's anything unsafe about losing I have people losing 10 to 15 pounds a week every week. Who says you're supposed to lose 2 pounds a week? That's a myth. And I was just outraged because it isn't safe. And I've been saying that it hasn't been safe for a long time. And darned if Kai Hibbard didn't come out just at a few months ago and start speaking publicly on CBS and other morning shows about the horrible things that she and others did to their bodies to achieve those weight losses. And they sign a contract saying that they're not supposed to say anything. And Kai, her conscience would not allow her to continue to perpetuate the lie that it's okay to lose that kind of weight. And she and I got in contact with each other, and we've been going back and forth. We've become very good friends. And she absolutely is on the same page as I am. You know what? You can do it, but you got to do it right, and you got to be healthy when you do it.
Yeah.
So I was so pleased. It was such an honor to me to have her write the foreword for the second edition of my book.
I'm so glad she's speaking up, because I've like you, I've had an issue with that show since it started, and I think it just perpetuates, you know, false information. Everybody loves the trainers on that show, and they believe them, and I'm so happy you're speaking out, and now she's speaking out, and we can get that information out to the public that it's not safe or healthy.
You know, it really isn't. And, you know, the people on the show, they've got more doctors and healthcare professionals monitoring them than a sitting president. So it's not like the people on the show are under a lot of risk, but it's the viewers who watch this show. And, you know, it's huge. It's in 90 countries, and it's filmed in 25. And it gets the message across that a 15 to 20-pound weekly weight loss is what people should be striving for. I mean, when a contestant on that show has any single-digit weight loss, this hush of shame rolls through the studio as if it had just been announced that the person had strangled a puppy or something. It's like, and you know what? The reality is, that's the only way to do it successfully and keep it off.
Yeah, unless you want to yo-yo back and forth and
right.
Lose it and gain it, lose it and gain it.
Did you see there was this new study that came out very, very recently, it was on the news, it was huge, just within the last couple of months, from, I believe it was the University of Florida, and on all over the news it was saying, fast weight loss is what's proven to be most effective. Lose it fast. That's been proven by this study. Quick and skinny, all these big, you know, headlines. And I'm like, wow, this so goes against everything I've experienced and I know and I believe in. And I went and I read this study, and I couldn't believe it. What they said, it's absolutely true. The people in this study who lost the weight the fastest kept the weight off the longest, and you know what? Fast weight lost losers lost 1.5 pounds a week. That was the average. The slow losers lost half a pound. The medium losers lost a pound. And the fast, quick, rapid losers lost 1.5 pounds a week. You know what I say? You say tomato, I say tomato. We're both singing the same song.
Yes, yes. You know, oh, my goodness. Yes, if people just saw that title, they'd be thinking, ooh, fast weight loss, not 1.5 pounds.
Oh, you know what? In every story I read about it, they never mentioned those amounts. It was just, oh, the studies prove that those who lost the weight the fastest at the beginning were most successful at keeping it off. Every study just skimmed the cream off the top without getting deep inside.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it perpetuates all this stuff. See, that's, again, the reason for my website, the reason for the book. These myths that we have been spoon-fed or shoveled down our throat, however you prefer to look at it, for all these years, you know what? They're baloney. And I discovered this, you know, obviously by experiencing it all, but then I started doing research and looking into it when I lost the weight the second time around, which it was 147 pounds the second time around because I gained so much back after the first time. And what I found, the thing that starts out my book and the message I want to get out there was I found these groundbreaking studies in obesity that have been performed for more than 50 years by these preeminent obesity researchers. It was Dr. Jules Hirsch of Rockefeller University and Dr. Rudolf Leibel of Columbia University. And they came up with these same conclusions over and over again. They discovered that people who have an ongoing weight problem, and we're not talking about somebody who gained 5 pounds and lost it, people who've done over and over the roller coaster, have metabolisms that end up functioning totally differently than someone who's never had a weight problem. And as soon as someone who's had an ongoing weight problem cuts back on their caloric intake, their metabolism begins to drop until it eventually becomes the metabolic equivalent of a person who's starving. I mean, think about it. If anybody who's had an ongoing weight problem, you suddenly go on a diet. What happens? You walk into a grocery store, you want to eat. You get behind the wheel of your car, you want to eat. You sit at your desk at work, and all you think about is eating. And the reason is not about willpower and about being weak. According to these research studies, your body is sending out endless physiological and psychological messages that tell you that you're starving. And so there you go. That is the pressure that all of us who have ongoing weight problems feel. It is not about willpower. It is about what your body is telling you. So when you look at people who have an ongoing weight problem, now all of a sudden you look at them in a different light. They're not some weak loser who can't keep their mouth shut. They are absolutely fighting incredibly strong metabolic messages that their body is sending them. And most people just end up giving into them.
Oh, it's so true. Oh, did you have that issue when you lost the weight the first time?
I have the issue still. You know what? This Dr. Leibel came back and he proved through these studies it never gets any better, and that is absolutely true. The metabolism, someone who's had an ongoing weight problem who loses it, stays down, stays low. And so I am always hungry, always still, always. It never, ever got any better. And what's interesting is that he also said that people who've lost a lot of weight, who have an ongoing weight problem, are always cold because their bodies are sending out these messages that they need to put more meat on their bones. So guess what? I'm going to make it so you're cold so you feel like you got to pack on the weight. Oh, my God, it's so true. I am constantly freezing. Constantly. It's one of the reasons I always wear long sleeves. I'm shivering when other people are, burning up. Because my body wants me to gain that weight back. I still fight it every single day.
That's amazing. I had not heard about the coldness with the weight issue.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
What? Until I wondered. You think there's something wrong with you? Well, yeah, my metabolism is just absolutely so slow. It's trying to get me to gain that weight back.
Wow.
So, you know, it's interesting. That's why when I went through, it's interesting. The first time I wrote the first book, was really about, you know, having a positive body image and feeling good about yourself regardless, you know, as long as you're exercising and doing the right thing. But when I was out on the book tour, everybody kept saying, what diet did you use? What's the diet? Tell me how you did it, you know. And I was like, you know, I don't believe in diets. Diets are a whole different bucket of peas, but they really wanted a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly did I do? So I went back and started writing it down and realized that there are very specific things that I did to help myself control that chronic starvation. And that's, you know, there's a lot of things, and I talk about them, but the number one thing I think that is most helpful for those of us with ongoing weight problems is to eat all the time. You know what? We're hungry all the time. We got to eat all the time. But instead of sneaking cookies in our underwear drawer, which is what we tend to do, you know, because people, they're going to be watching us, I just eat. I still feel guilty about it sometimes because I have these ingrown, you know, feelings of guilt about eating. But you know what? Every couple of hours, I eat. I have a granola bar, or I will go and have low-salt pretzels, or I will then have my light lunch. I eat all the time because then I never allow myself to get too hungry. Because once I do, all of my ability to make good choices goes right out the window, and I will eat anything that is within arm's reach.
That is a great tip, because I think most people are afraid to eat, and they perpetuate the problem.
They absolutely do. You know what? I was at the supermarket the other day, and I was getting all this food, you know, because we eat all the time. I mean, it took a long time for me to retrain myself so I don't eat junk all the time. That was quite a big transition. But, you know, I had this big, long conveyor belt full of healthy foods that I was getting, and this young lady comes up behind me who is quite heavy, and she puts on her conveyor belt a basket, you know, and just one of those shopping baskets full of Slim Fast bars.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, I've been there, done that. How many times have we all been there, done that? You know what? You try to have this, you know, this teeny little minuscule bar for breakfast, and then you grit it out until lunchtime. Then you grit it out, and if you can make it till your one sensible meal, you know, at night, and, you know, if you are super motivated, maybe you can hang on to that draconian regime for, you know, a week or, you know, if you're really, but the reality is that is for someone who is in a chronic state of starvation, who's always hungry, that's the absolute worst thing to do, because you're hungry, and you're making yourself hungrier, and you're fighting it. You're literally fighting not your willpower. You're fighting your physiological and psychological messages. And, you know, they even, when I say psychological, they came back with these studies, and in the same studies proved that they had the same neurosis. People who have had ongoing weight problems, who lose a lot of weight, had the same neurosis as people who are starving. It's called semi-starvation neurosis. And anybody who's ever lost a lot of weight is absolutely going to be able to relate to this. They fantasize about screwing up. They think about it in their night, you know, at night they go to sleep and they think, they dream of eating and they actually think they did it. You know, they wake up in the morning, oh my God, I blew my diet. This is called semi-starvation neurosis. It is absolutely a psychological side effect of it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just so important that people understand that they are not weak. They, you know how many times I heard that from my mother coming up, because I was adopted, so no one in my family had any kind of weight problem. Mine is definitely genetically based. And I would hear, if you had just had a little willpower, just have a little willpower, you know? So I grew up thinking I was willpowerless. It's not true.
Yeah, it's unfair. People think that. And I think the diet industry feeds on it, too, because people feel guilty and they feel like failures, and then they go into the next diet place and they go through the whole.
Oh, my gosh. And now you know why I feel like I feel about Biggest Loser.
Mm-hmm.
What do they tell these people? What, you hate yourself. What is wrong with you? You know, oh, my gosh. It is not, and they do, people do. I mean, I've been, you know, I was almost 300 pounds, and I couldn't get it. It's like, what is wrong with me? You know, what is wrong that I can control anything else in my life, and I can't control this?
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you understand that it is not you, that it is your the physiological responses of your body, then all of a sudden you're like, whoa. You know what? Now I can start figuring out how to deal with it. And that's what I did. I was 5 pounds shy of the 300-pound mark. I gained back the 100 pounds I'd lost. I was devastated. And I went, you know what? I want to find out what the story is here, you know?
Yeah.
and that's really when you start understanding what it is, then you could start figuring out how to fight it. You know, when you're battling an enemy that you can't see, whole different bucket of peas than when you're staring one right in the face.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm glad you're getting that message out, too, that people aren't a failure. You know, it's so important for people to know. And once that weight's lifted, then the actual weight can start coming off.
Yes, and it's handleable. But I think now, especially this month, people need to really start realizing, too, there's other factors involved in all this, which I discussed, but that they can train their children to have these same, to make the same mistakes that they did. You know, this is the first ever National Obesity Awareness Month.
Yes.
Michelle Obama's brought that out. And, you know, it's real interesting that I discuss in my book something, again, that I discovered when I was doing this research, and I was blown away by the concept of opioids. And I'd never heard of them before. And once I started understanding, I wanted to know why we crave things. Why do we crave chocolate and cupcakes, and, you know, why could I give a poop about celery? You know, what is it that makes that happen? Well, you know, it turns out that our bodies actually respond to these things called opioids, which actually, whenever you eat sugary foods or fat-laden foods, these chemicals called opioids are released into your bloodstream, and they shoot right up to tiny receptors in your brain and give you a feeling of mild euphoria. So this proves that when it comes to eating fat and sugar, there is most definitely a strong addictive aspect at work, and it also proves why people have such a tough time resisting these things. Because what happens is we have a sensory memory. You know, if you've never had something like, say, for instance, I use the example in my book, there's a Swedish Christmas dessert called Rizgrickendorf or something. I can't even say it. And you ask somebody, have you ever had a craving for that? And they'll go, no. You know why? Because they've never tasted it. So the minute you taste something that's got all this sugar and fat in it, and it sends up these opioid chemicals to your brain that says, ooh, this makes me happy, now you're training your sensory memory. You want that again. So when something doesn't have any opioids in it, like celery sticks or carrot sticks, you eat it and you're nothing. You actually are craving a high. This is why, you know, cupcakes and chocolate, oh my gosh, what does it have in it? It has the two biggest opioid-producing ingredients in it, sugar and fat. That's why it is the number one craved thing in the nation. So once you understand that, you have to think about, when you think about children, you think, oh, kids can burn it off. Now, they're just kids. I got a diet, but let my kids eat this stuff. You know, I don't want to deprive them.
Oh, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, you're training their sensory memories to crave this now and later in life. You're making the next generation of obese individuals with ongoing weight problems. You're
yes.
training them, and none of us want to leave that legacy to our children.
It's so true. So educating parents is so important right now.
It really is. And you know what? I wish I had it, because, you know, I didn't know all these things when I was bringing up my kids, and I was mm-hmm. like, oh, we're off to, you know, Mickey D's, you know, because that's, and I'll have a salad, you know. So my kids are, you know what? I wish I knew it, what I know now, then. So, you know, education, it's what we all can benefit from.
Yes. You know, we're running low on time, so just wanted to ask you one quick last question.
Sure.
What is one of the biggest perks that being healthy and fit has afforded you?
Well, you know, it's real interesting that, yeah, you get all kinds of perks from working out. You know, you get maybe a few more admiring looks, and who knows, you can walk the stairs without sucking for air. Well, I think the biggest perk I ever got, I forgot, it was not that long ago, I locked myself out of my house. And it was like, oh, I either have to sit here and wait a few hours for someone to come home, bust down a door or a window, or try the impossible. And I tell you what, when I was able to fit through the doggy door for my Cocker Spaniel, that was absolutely the best perk of losing weight that I've yet to experience.
That is awesome. And one last thing, I want to make sure people know how to reach you.
You know what? They can go to my website at www.imperfectfitness.com.
Great. Thank you so much. You're listening to Caring About Your Health on Health Beat Radio.